Welcome back, everybody, to the Hubcast. I've got Steph, I've got Jess with me on the mics today, and I'm excited because Inbound is in just a few weeks, second week of October. Something that's interesting and that we were all talking about just before we hopped on was that we honestly haven't spent that much time looking at the speakers and the agenda, which if you've been a Hubcast listener for a long time, we used to hype on Inbound for months and months and months, which, of course, this is a product of, you know, it being all virtual and changing up the format. But I don't know. What do you guys think?
I was just thinking about this as you brought it up. Like, I was trying to think of why I haven't gotten so hyped, because I keep seeing my on this day on Facebook, like, you were in Boston a year ago, 8 years ago, 9 years ago. I'm always there. And I was a little bummed. And so I kind of was just like sad. And then I started looking at it and I was like, I guess I don't need to explicitly plan out every session I'm attending to make sure that A, I can get into the room, and B, I don't have to run around the entire length of the BCEC to get there. So the nice thing about it being virtual is it removes the stress of having to plan that out, which is kind of nice.
Exactly.
In some ways it is like, it's like a low maintenance, like, kind of activity that you can involve.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be a thing. You can look at the agenda the week before and just plan out your meetings accordingly and try to schedule in screen breaks. That was my big takeaway from last year. If you sessions back and forth, they'll fall out of your head. So go for a walk around the block or schedule that time in intentionally. So
yeah, leave your computer.
Yes.
And then come back.
One thing that I did last year that I really liked was I hooked up my laptop to my TV.
Yes.
And watch some of the sessions on that, which is just a little bit easier on the eyes for me. And
get that distance. And
yeah. And then I could, like, you know, fold laundry and stuff.
I did that while I ate lunch. It was kind of nice to not eat lunch at my desk, you know?
Yeah. Like, get up and move your computer around the house, sit outside a little bit. That's nice. I was just saying
that I have total FOMO when picking sessions virtually, because it's just so easy to, like, pick the session that you want to be in.
Yeah.
So I always, like, make a last minute choice and then I regret it. I'm like, oh wait, this one seems so much cooler. And then you realize you don't have to walk across an entire convention center. You can just leave one session and join the other. So we have, like, an internal Slack group that's like, which session are you in? Is it worth it? Do I switch? So
this is one of my favorite things about virtual events now, is that the bar has been raised, because you can no longer, like, you don't have that shame of, wow, this session isn't what I thought it would be. Do I sneak out the back and I have to pick up my laptop and walk away? Now it's like, just hit that leave button and you're on to the next session, which means every session has to crush it or people will bail. And I love that.
Stephanie, you run Impact's virtual events. Like, do you see exit numbers? And, like, is that an indication of, like, whether or not you invite back a speaker?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you can look at, you can't really see exit numbers per se, but you can see the average time in session and you can see people's join time and leave time. So I can say, I mean, technically you could do, like, an equation in Excel, but, or a formula in Excel to see the length of time they're in the session. But just on average, if the average stay time is really low, like, we know something wasn't great.
That's the post event report we need from HubSpot. Yeah.
Any good event producer has someone in every session, every breakout watching, because you just never know, especially if it's live, when it might go off the rails, or if it's pre-recorded, when there might be a technical glitch. You can't just let your event run and not be honest. I'm sure they'll have someone watching every session, but it's interesting to see something that I think might be either a sticking point or an exit point for people, and then check if that was true or not.
Something that I don't know about this year is whether or not sessions are going to be pre-recorded or live.
Yeah, it's interesting. I hope that if they're pre-recorded, they have the speakers there in chat. In my opinion, like, I'm not like, oh, if it's not live, it's not good or it's not that cool. I'm fine with things being pre-recorded.
I think
sometimes it is better. But if they're pre-recorded and the speaker is just, like, pieced out and not even there, you miss any engagement. Like, I could just watch a YouTube video at that point. Aside from, I can comment with the other attendees, but and still do that on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want to bring, I had some time to go through the agenda and I want to highlight a couple of sessions that I'm excited about. Most of these were solely based on like the title and the company that these people were at. Because if you scroll through all of the speakers, I would say probably 70% almost is CEOs, founders, or like some other C-suite type person, which if you're a CEO, you're a business leader, that's great. And those are going to be really interesting and great topics for you. And I think this is the first year that I really feel like, okay, like HubSpot is big enough and has become a legit enough CRM that having those types of people at Inbound makes more and more sense.
Yeah.
But I get excited about the boots on the ground type
same.
People, the marketing managers. And one of the things I really like that they've been doing with virtual Inbound is the case studies. There's a couple that are in there that I'm excited about. But the first one I put in here is Dawn Ostroff. She's the chief content and advertising business officer at Spotify. And the reason I put this in here is mostly because I'm very intrigued by Spotify and how they've done their whole business and in their marketing. And I think that hearing that perspective, especially being in an audio only space and industry, and how do you continue to create and advertise content and things like that. I think she could just have a really interesting perspective.
Yeah, I agree.
The second one I thought was really cool is a woman named Amy Hayward. She's a digital marketing manager for the Cayman Islands government. And she's doing a case study talk on the Cayman Islands COVID-19 website, turning clicks into changes in behavior, which I was just like, I mean, one, who doesn't want to listen to somebody from the Cayman Islands talk in, you know, Connecticut in October. So I was excited for that, but I just, for me personally, I am going to get so much more out of a session where somebody tells like a real life story of, hey, here's what we did and here's what worked and here's what didn't work and here's what we learned versus somebody that puts together like this nice, you know, buttoned up talk. So I think that'll be really interesting. And there's another case study by Carrie Fairbanks, who's the National Sales and Marketing Operations Manager at Arc, called Making the Big Switch, the Blueprint to Adopting a New CRM Across Your Organization, which Arc is a large organization. Mm-hmm. So again, super interested to hear her story and her perspective about how they made the switch to the HubSpot CRM.
And I think that those stories are so powerful because for users who are really trying to, you know, adopt HubSpot as their marketing hub, their sales hub, you know, one place for all departments to live in, the challenge is not, you know, can we get this tool to do the thing that we want it to do? Like those at the end of the day become the easy questions to answer and to solve for. It's either, yes, it can do the thing or no, it can't. I always find the organizational change and managing those expectations and training your team to use the tool and actually getting data inputted into the system are way more logistically challenging and way more likely to, you know, create this failure to launch scenario than anything technically involved. So just seeing like, yes, you can take a large organization like Arc and adopts, you know, a brand new system, a brand new way of doing things and do so successfully can be so powerful to, you know, HubSpot users who are really trying to think like, can I use one tool for all things? Maybe. Let's see if it's like possible to get my organization on board with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Another one that I'm excited about is Lindsay Roethlisberger from Zapier. She's the senior manager of marketing ops and email. And her title is The Work You Don't See, How Operations Professionals Fight the Fires, Clean the Data, and Work to Keep Things Running, which, you know, we've been talking about operations the last couple of episodes. It's something that's been, I think, on HubSpot's mind a lot, and they're doing a lot of education around operations roles. And there's certainly a lot of speakers that are talking about revenue operations, you know, obviously, because HubSpot's trying to get people to use Operations Hub. But this one I just thought sounded really interesting, especially because, you know, I think Zapier is a really cool company. And I'm super interested to hear how their operations people do their stuff. And the last one that I think is going to be cool is Yale Miller and Zoe Dian from Monday.com. Their talk title is Building Brand Credibility and Visibility Through Link Building. And I saw that and I was like, oh, wow, a talk on link building. Great. I feel like, you know, my perspective on link building right now, and that's because I'm not, you know, I'm not an SEO person in the day-to-day anymore. And so I have this like perspective of link building or this like reputation around link building that it's just like bad and, you know, black hat SEO type stuff. But of course, in their description of their talk, they immediately say, here's how we took a strategy that gets a bad rap and used it to, you know, do all kinds of great things at Monday. So I was like, ooh, yes, I want to know like how link building is not just like people sending spammy emails to put your links on their website.
I really like Monday's stuff too. I'm excited to hear from them a little bit more.
Yeah.
I also found one more I want to throw in here, Karina, is I had just started looking. And of course, it's like the first session at 6 a.m. my time on the first day. It's called No More Cookie Cutter Marketing. And it's one of those things that I looked at the session description and I thought I was fully prepared for it to say, everyone's always done marketing the same way, but yours can be different, you know, something like that. Not at all. It's actually about cookies and like this cookie-less world that we're moving into. Oh. And so it looks pretty interesting. I'm definitely going to check it out. It's with Alex Moore, who's the senior partner and marketing and technology at Strategon Inc. But it's the things you should start doing now to prepare for just the direction that the world's headed in. And he got me in the beginning of the description because he started with mentioning GDPR and the changes we've experienced in GDPR. So I was hooked from the get-go.
Oh yeah. That one does look good. Oh, and of course, Marcus.
Oh yeah. Marcus.
Oh, yeah. That guy. Yeah, him. That guy.
I knew I recognized that name.
If you haven't seen Marcus speak, you got to register for a session. If you have seen Marcus speak, you should probably still register.
I've seen Marcus speak, you know, 27 times probably. Never gets old.
Yeah. He is just the funnest person on stage. I love it. And if you want to see direct links to any of these people and their sessions, it's in the show notes. impactplus.com/hubcast. This is episode 275. Before we move on, I also just have to mention this past week before we're recording, Dharmesh, co-founder and CTO of HubSpot, just became a billionaire. So that's cool.
His post about it made me love him even more though than I already did.
We love Dharmesh, and I really bring that up because I wanted to just give him a big Hubcast shout out. Just such an awesome, awesome person. There's a link to his post on LinkedIn in the show notes if you want to check out what he talked about, what he's talking about, how he's investing the money that he's making. And of course, he's a billionaire because HubSpot stock right now is soaring. And yeah, it just makes me so pumped for him because he's just such an awesome guy. So way to go, Dharmesh. We appreciate you. I got some breaking news. Hubstars is back. And woo-hoo. Most of you are probably like, what's Hubstars? But I'm gonna let Steph tell you about what Hubstars was and
yeah,
a little bit about what it is now.
Yes. So Hubstars, now relaunched and rebranded as Hub Fans, is essentially a group of people who are super passionate about HubSpot, not unlike ourselves, and just like talk about it all the time. So if you're that person who goes to a happy hour or a networking cocktail event, got a drink in your hand, everyone's chatting, and you're like, but this workflow I built, this is probably for you. And I think all of us have done that at some point. So HubFans is cool. It's a little gamified, fun place to go when you need a brain break. It gives you a chance to get advanced knowledge about some of the things that HubSpot is doing. You get points for completing certain activities, things like just sharing something new that HubSpot posted on Twitter that you think others who follow you might want to see. You also get connected to this whole community of people like us who, like you, love HubSpot, love learning about HubSpot, using HubSpot. There's peer-to-peer mentorship. Top fans even get to be top Hub fans, aka those who earn the most points, get to be part of the Hub Fans Council, which helps represent HubSpot at external events. We help design the future of the program. So it's brand new. Christina Garnett is heading it up. She's fantastic. And it's exciting to see it come back. For those of you who don't know, I was the number one Hub star back in the day, held my title strong for a long time. And Yes. Not even a humble brag, straight up brag. It was a title I loved holding, and I will climb my way back to the top of Hub Fans because I do truly love HubSpot and shouting it to the world. So if that's you, come join me.
Yes. If you love like ambassador programs where you can get rewards and compete with other people, this is
for if you love to be competitive about your passion, definitely join me.
Back in the day, this isn't so Stephanie used to run an impact version of a group such as this. And before I started working at Impact, I remember joining it and I was like, I want to get the sweatshirt. And it was like one of the top prizes. So I was like sharing all the posts, doing all the things. Like it can get really like fun and competitive, I will say. Sadly, I never got the sweatshirt, and this is really just my public cry. Maybe like go into the closets of Impact's archives
and just take the sweatshirt.
I'd have to actually go in the office to do that. But
you would. Yeah.
but it can be fun to just like have some nonsensicalness in your day to just be like, I want to talk about this thing, or I want to earn this.
And you still like, you're still engaged with the work type activity. You know, you're not just being distracted by Facebook or YouTube. You get to do something helpful to your HubSpot community, and it's fun.
Yeah. Agreed. I'll see you in the HubStars or the HubFans.
HubFans.
Yeah. So links in the show notes to join. Really all you have to do is click a button to join. But if you actually really want to join, you got to go in there and do some stuff.
Yes.
But starts with really easy stuff, you know, then there's more involved things. So get in there and check it out.
Yeah.
Something that's been on my mind, which we started talking about a little bit last episode about, you know, hiring a HubSpot person and like the operations type role. But specifically my question today and what I want to hear from both of you about is if you're hiring somebody that's going to own HubSpot, which of course this is going to look different for everybody in terms of what they're going to specifically have to own, how many hubs, all of that. But if you're hiring a HubSpot owner, let's just assume that you're a smaller business with smaller, you know, HubSpot usage. Does this person need to have prior HubSpot specific experience or not?
I have so many strongly held beliefs on this subject.
Strong belief. So please lead us.
No, Steph, let's start with you. And then I'll just like charge up for my rant.
My belief is not necessarily, but it depends how long you want to take to get started. And if you want to pay someone for, let's just say 6 to 12 months to get to the level where someone who already has HubSpot experience would be, and you're okay with that, go right ahead, but you're in for a long journey.
Steph, I had a shock face on.
I got you real stirred up at first.
You came around to the right conclusion. It's all about, do you want to move fast or do you want to move slow? And a big consideration for fast or slow is, do you have a, you know, beefy, well-built out HubSpot portal existing, or are you starting from scratch?
Good point.
If you're starting from scratch, your HubSpot owner could then theoretically start from scratch and learn the tool and build it the way that they want to build it. And, you know, take 3 to 6 months to do so. But you are, again, investing in their education, their time, but you probably will waste time or like extend the timeline, but also come in with someone who might not, you know, have as high of a price tag in terms of overhead, in terms of salary. Mm-hmm. But if you have a beefy, you know, really complex portal that maybe has had other people playing around in it, maybe has had some agencies built and stuff that you don't know how it works in it, then if you hire someone that has little to no HubSpot experience and you're intending to train them, you have to think, what is, if does anyone on my team have the HubSpot skills or experience to train this person in-house? No? Okay. Then I have to pay a company to train them to get them up to speed. How long will that take? If it's a beefy portal, we're not looking at 3 to 6 months anymore. We're looking at like 6 months to a year before that person can truly be called a HubSpot owner, that they're not going to their, you know, paid trainer to ask a bunch of questions and say, hey, I'm running into this issue. How do I solve for it? So while I do think that you can come up with scenarios where you can save a little bit of money on overhead and hire someone in with a lesser salary, if you're in the right scenario, you really got to think of the opportunity cost and like how much this might slow down the momentum of your organization. If you have a really beefy portal, you've got a lot of stuff that's already in motion, your HubSpot owner leaves and brought all of their, like all of your HubSpot knowledge internally walks out the door. What the heck do you do? Only option is to hire someone with a similar level of experience that can stand on their own 2 feet, that probably will still need training because it's very hard to figure out someone else's science project.
It is.
But you're going to look at then a 3 to 6 month time frame, or maybe even a 3 month time frame if you hire the right person with the right skill sets. But it's going to be expensive hire.
And you know, HubSpot is not, it's not to say that it's like such a complicated platform to figure out. It's that there's just so much. It's so comprehensive. And we have a company full of what? Let's say 50 to 60 people here who know HubSpot, who use HubSpot. And how many questions a day do the three of us and Nick get about, can I do this with a workflow? Does anyone know how to do, like, there's just so much. Also, after all this talk of a beefy platform, I really want a roast beef sandwich for lunch now.
But we're all going to Arby's.
Yep.
I mean, I'm just going to lay it out there. I have trained HubSpot experts and how to come up to speed in the tool. And that has taken like roughly, in the best case scenarios, like 1 to 3 months. Honestly, you get the right person, you invest in that hire, you hire a headhunter to like find you someone with the right HubSpot experience, you barely skip a beat because that person has the day-to-day knowledge to keep the trains running on time. And then they can build on your existing platform, make it into something that they know how to own and run and really optimize to the best degree. But that's going to be expensive and you have to be willing to pay the price. And if not, you're going to pay for it in the long run because your organization is going to slow down. You're going to miss a beat and you're going to like suffer a lot internally to bring that, you know, relatively, you know, inexperienced hire up to speed, and you're still going to have to pay for training for them. So if you really factor in all of those costs, what's the best strategy moving forward? Invest in the right hire.
Absolutely. And they're not sponsoring this episode, but if you're listening to this and thinking about hiring, check out our friends at HubSearch because they do help find the best HubSpotters. They have a network of people with HubSpot experience. I'll reach out to them if they want to, you know, sponsor this episode or something, but I truly just love them. And every time
we'll get a link for them.
We'll throw it
in the show notes. Cause we do love HubSearch.
We do. And every time someone asks me, I'm like, just ask HubSearch.
Yeah, no, that exact example of someone that I was able to bring up to speed in 1 to 3 months, as opposed to 3 to 6, we used HubSearch and we found the exact right candidate. And that company was able to really like make leaps and strides that were not possible because they had tried to hire someone just through the regular recruiting tactics and that person didn't work out because they were in over their head. They felt like they couldn't, you know, tackle the challenge. Yeah. And this was a portal that had been previously built up by an agency. So they had all this stuff going on in there that no one really internally knew what was going on.
Oh, even coming into impacts, like the better part of a decade of experience and I came in, I was like, what is happening?
Oh God.
Yeah, there are 1,800 forms.
If you're a light user, though, if you have a relatively like clean portal, you've only been on the platform for like maybe a year, maybe you just like have some landing pages set up, have a blog published. Like if you consider yourself to be a light user, then someone with less experience that you're willing to invest and train in can be that HubSpot owner of your dreams. But I always caution clients that have complicated portals of you're going to pay for this one way or another. decide if you want to pay in like monetary dollars or your like sanity and emotional strength.
Yeah. And long-term monetary dollars potentially.
It's true. Yeah. It adds up in the end.
That was a great breakdown of pros and cons. The only thing that I would add is I also think that I've seen people be really successful who don't have HubSpot experience and are coming into more of like the operations type role when they have similar experience on similar platforms. And I think of it almost like they already speak the language. It's just like a slightly different dialect, right? Like they've been on Salesforce for a long time, or they've been on, you know, they've had experience in different CRM platforms. So they already speak the language. And their training really is more so just translating into, well, this is what HubSpot calls things. And this is how like HubSpot works, but they're used to understanding a database and, you know, how things work in that context. And that can work. It's really just making sure that we're vetting those people to make sure that they are operationally minded, process minded, and have relevant experience, even if it's on another platform, rather than like, I just have never been in a CRM before. And that's going to be totally different. But yeah, that's good stuff. I got a wish list item. It is to be able to put chat transcripts into marketing emails. Now, the title of this is not my favorite because I don't think that it really describes what we really want to do. Because when you say marketing emails, it makes it sound like you want to send the chat transcripts like to everybody. And I think that that's probably the reason why HubSpot doesn't let you do this right now is because it's a privacy thing where they don't want you to be able to take an individual contact's chat transcript and literally send it to anybody via a workflow. But a situation came up recently where we wanted to, as soon as a chatbot finished chatting with a contact, we wanted to not just get a notification that a conversation had been completed, but send that transcript automatically to the team to be able to do a quick gut check to say, oh, is this a legit opportunity that we need to hop into right now? Or is it nothing? I don't need to worry about it. Whatever. So of course you can put a link, like you can put personalization tokens into the email from information that the chatbot collected. Of course, if you're getting more sophisticated, you could take that information and segment them based on that, right? Like if they've put in this information and they meet this criteria, we're going to say that they're qualified. So we don't need the transcript. But right now, the only way to get the transcript in your email is to physically go into the inbox and click a button that says send transcript into it, which kind of defeats the purpose. So I'm kind of surprised this isn't a more popular feature request because I would think that more people would just want to have their transcripts automatically sent to their team. And maybe this doesn't need to be a workflow, right? Like maybe mm-hmm. this is just option in the conversations inbox to say, like, send a notification for all bot conversations.
I was going to say a notification would be nice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because you can get notifications that bot conversations are happening, but it's not going to give you the transcript.
Right. Itself. I would like a notification that links to the transcript on the contact record.
Exactly.
Ooh, or like keyword analysis to say like, hey, in the bot conversation, these particular words were used.
Yes. You know, I have loved that lately. Actually, I've been using a lot of social tools that have moderation tools mm-hmm. where you can make sure people don't say, you know, maybe certain crass words or things you don't want in your community. But I just turn it on for like, anytime anyone says Marcus Sheridan, I get an alert. It's like a Google alert. I would love that in chat transcripts.
Agreed. And you know, with the conversation intelligence that's in the calling mm-hmm. features now, where you can put in keywords to look for in calls, I wonder if that could be something that could happen in the future. Speaking of things that are happening in HubSpot. Mm-hmm. I got a couple product updates, a couple that I'm actually pretty excited about. The first of which I'm probably the most excited about, which is you can now create contacts with a workflow. I'm going to put everybody on the spot and I'm going to make you tell me why or when, what like use case you would want to do this.
I feel like the Jeopardy music is playing in my head right now.
I'm thinking through a really complicated one that I don't actually think would be that good.
But let's hear it.
Well, I'm contemplating that thing where somebody, I think it's a little too hard, but where somebody leaves the company and it's like, so-and-so is no longer with the company. Please direct all your inquiries to this email. And if that person is not a contact, like, I don't know. I'm sorting through that in my head.
Interesting.
Oh, I don't know how you'd pull that out of the
email. I got a good one.
Okay.
I got a good one. Referral programs. That's like the most obvious one.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
You are giving someone's contact information saying this is someone who would like to sign up. I don't know how do you get around like GDPR stuff though? Because they're not consenting. Like someone is giving their information.
Well, just because.
So I don't know.
Just because they're not consenting in HubSpot doesn't mean they didn't consent somewhere else. Depending on how your privacy policy is written with third-party integrations, that could still work if you pass it through. And that's what we do with a lot of our event registrations. But the integration is creating it automatically. We're not using a workflow to create the contact.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. So like I have a form on my website that says, here's like my information. I want to register Stephanie as a potentially really great fit for Impact Plus. I think she'd be an amazing member of this community. Like send her an invitation and you can say Jess Palmieri like recommended that she join. So you would have to email Stephanie to say, hey, your friend Jessica said that Impact Plus is this amazing online community that we want you to be a part of. I'm still emailing Stephanie and I got her email address from a third party and Stephanie hasn't technically consented to receiving email communication.
Yes, that is true.
But I guess, and maybe Steph, you know this, I'm not as deeply versed in all of the policies, but I'm wondering if that is, if you do send that initial opt-in email, and then if they don't explicitly opt in from that, then you just.
Yeah, technically, I don't think that's okay, at least under GDPR and probably CCPA and even CAN spam. But it would be different if you sent it, if an individual like referral program rep reached out in a one-to-one email, because that's really no different than just finding a person and sending them an email in Gmail. You could probably use it that way and ask if they're interested to go fill out this acceptance form or something.
Yeah.
That's probably how I would do it.
That's a really good point though. I'm glad that you brought that, the data privacy specifically up, Jess, because I think like a lot of people saw this and were like, referral programs, and I'm probably nuts with it. Another thing that I was thinking about with this is, we've worked with several like schools or nonprofits, people like similar organizations who have classes or things that like families register for. And so I'm thinking like, let's say a school is using HubSpot and a parent can fill out a form to get more information.
Oh, love that.
They could put their spouse on, you know, mm-hmm. as a secondary contact. And then essentially what the create a contact with a workflow action does is, of course you can't have two email address fields, but you need an email address for that person. So the first email address field is your standard one that connects you to the original contact. And then you would have, you know, spouse's email address.
Now that you say that, I just did this for our now canceled in-person event where we had people register in groups. And we knew that most people would not want to put in all the information for every single person as they register them. So we said, just enter your information, buy tickets for your additional group, and then put their email addresses in. We'll send them an email that they've been registered with a link to fill out the form themselves. And we called it email secondary, which is like exactly what you said. It was a fake field. And then we kind of like, I went and created new contracts through an integration, but actually that would have been perfect.
Exactly. Yeah. And you basically just tell HubSpot, hey, the email for this new contact is coming from this other property that we've been collecting.
I love that.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. Another thing that's pretty cool is Google lead syncing, which we've been able to do this on Facebook and I think Twitter, LinkedIn for a while with ads, but now we can also do it with Google lead ads. So essentially connect your Google Ads accounts, turn lead syncing on, and any lead ads that you're running on Google are automatically going to pass contacts into HubSpot. One thing to be aware of is you're not going to be able to get past leads from Google's API. It's only going to be leads acquired after you set up that sync. The nice thing too is you're going to get the ability to see all forms that are synced and view submissions from lead syncing settings and change the HubSpot property mapping to the Google lead form field. And that's actually an update that got made across all of the like lead syncing integrations, so that if your fields don't quite match up, you can actually tell HubSpot like which ones are which, rather than HubSpot just saying, we didn't sync this field because it didn't match anything.
Nice.
So that's good. Any leads that we're collecting anywhere outside of HubSpot that we can automatically get into HubSpot is a big win.
Yeah.
Finally, Live. This has been in beta for a while.
Yeah.
I feel like it was like June of 2020 or something like that. This went into beta. So this is for Service Hub Pro and Enterprise. You can now do custom surveys. So you don't have to just do an NPS or a CSAT or a CES survey. You can just go in, select create a custom survey, and you can build it with, you know, kind of your standard question types, number ratings, sentiment, radio buttons, checkboxes, et cetera. And you can create new properties for all of those questions. So of course you can run automation based on those and segment people based on those, all that good stuff. So if you're using Service Hub Pro or Enterprise and are doing customer surveys, this is probably something that you've been waiting for a long time. So get in there, because you can now make them much more specific and custom to your own needs. Something that I was really interesting, it went live today and somebody, or this week, and somebody asked me like the same day whether or not you could do it, which I always love, is syncing tasks to Google and Office 365 calendars from HubSpot. So obviously a lot of sales reps work out of their Outlook or Google calendars, and that's primarily where they are, or their inbox is there and they have their calendars there. And then they go into HubSpot to, you know, log their notes and track their deals. But they're really living in, you know, those calendars. So this now gives you the ability to basically just like check a box that pushes any tasks that are in HubSpot that are assigned to you to a calendar. The only caveat to this is it is a one-way sync. So HubSpot pushes everything to your Outlook or Google Calendar. But if you like complete that on your Outlook or Google Calendar, it's not going to go away in HubSpot. It's not going to get marked as complete. But the thing that I was a little bit frustrated about that, because I was like, well, does that make it kind of unusable if people are working out of Outlook or Google, but then they have to go into HubSpot to check the thing off? But the thing that makes this a little more usable, I would say, is that when it creates the actual task in your Google or Outlook calendar, there's a direct link to that task in HubSpot. So really, it's more of a, okay, I see in my calendar, I needed to do this thing today at this time. I'm going to click on it, go to the task that has more information that's associated to the contact and the deal and all of that. And then I can check it off in HubSpot, and then that syncs back to my calendar. So it goes away. So I do think that this is this is usable and will be helpful for reps that like to work off of their calendar. The last update that's now live is placeholder actions in workflow.
Yes, I'm so happy.
Yeah, this is something that if you've ever used workflows, you're immediately like, oh,
finally.
The biggest thing I think that this comes up with is emails, right? Like you're creating a nurture sequence or any kind of follow-up sequence, and you know what the workflow needs to be. You just don't have the email created yet, but you can't create the workflow without selecting a placeholder email. So you just pick a random automated email that you've saved and put it in there and hope that you remember to go back and put the real one in there, which is just not ideal. I feel like if you've ever done that and accidentally turned your workflow on without changing the email, hit us up. I want to know.
Yeah, please. That is literally one of the reasons that I always put a 5-minute delay at the beginning of my workflows, that anything that isn't super time sensitive is, it's like a personal safety net, so that if I turn it on and I go, oh, I never moved that email, I have 5 minutes to turn it off.
Yeah. And basically all this is when you're going to an action in HubSpot in a workflow, you can just click the action, like send an email, and then you can just hit save and you don't have to select what the email is. And HubSpot will basically tell you like what things need to be input before you can turn the workflow on, and won't let you turn the workflow on before you have that put in, which is exactly what we need. There's a couple of actions that you can't do this with. So you can basically do it with all of your actions except for, which this is like somewhat obvious, but it's worth saying, custom code actions, format data actions, delays, so delaying for a set amount of time or until a day or a time, and then actions that are from connected apps, different integrations, which, makes sense. But there's a link in the show notes to learn more if you have any questions about placeholder actions in workflows. Last but certainly not least, there is a public beta right now for HubSpot payments.
Woo!
Probably 50% of people are like, wait, is that like for how I pay for HubSpot?
It's like Apple Pay, Google Pay, HubSpot Pay.
Yeah. If you Google like HubSpot payments, like everything that comes up is just about how to pay your HubSpot
bill.
So maybe they'll differentiate some of the naming conventions eventually. And this has been in beta for a while. Of course, it's something that's been asked for constantly, probably since HubSpot started. But this is going to allow you to collect one-time and recurring payments, manage everything from right inside the CRM. So you're going to be able to create a branded checkout page that you can embed onto your website. You can send it in an email or a chat. You can even add it to a quote. So after somebody signs a quote or accepts a quote, they can go straight to a payments page. So essentially HubSpot says you can deliver a delightful buyer experience with tools all connected to your website, automation, reporting, and customer records. So I will be honest, there's not a lot of information that you can find on how to do it. I think because it's still in beta, what you're going to need to do is reach out to your HubSpot rep, ask to get enrolled in the beta, and then you'll probably get a bunch of information that's not publicly available at this point. From what I understand, I think it's still using Stripe in the back end for those payments. But this just makes it really easy to essentially, what I would say is like, take simple payments.
Yeah.
Biggest caveat here, which HubSpot kind of puts in the fine print of this beta description, is that HubSpot payments is available to companies located in the United States who have been a customer for 6 months or more and have paid subscriptions to any of the hubs. You'll be best fit for this beta if you sell digital projects or products like services or software and don't collect sales taxes or use a separate tax software solution. So pretty specific, but of course, if you have a use case for this, reach out to your HubSpot CSM to get more information.
Yeah, that was my first impression, that there were a lot of caveats into like how you can specifically use this in its beta form. I'm sure in the future they'll figure out more of this functionality. Like they've got to figure out the taxes and stuff like that eventually. Mm-hmm. But I think that for right now, I'm intrigued. I think that this has long-term potential, but I want to see other people beta test it first in their specific use case scenarios to see just how complicated it is to set up.
Yeah. And I know that Impact did use this in the early beta for, it was basically like a really simple offer that we had that was set price.
Oh,
we
yeah.
wanted to just be able to like, yeah, send a link on a landing page and people to be able to go in and purchase right away. And it worked for us and it was easy. And basically what it does is it creates a deal on a pipeline for you and, you know, puts the deal amount and anything else that you have on the form in there. So again, if it's kind of a simple transaction that you're looking to do, it's going to be a really nice, easy solution for you. But if you need something that's more robust for payments, or the thing that's not clear to me is it says you can do recurring payments, but I'm not sure how you would have an individual manage their recurring payments. And it sounds like that might just have to be done with like, you know, a customer service rep or something like that. I'm not sure if there would be somewhere where they can like log in to, you know, cancel their recurring payment or things like that. But again, we're in early beta, so I'm sure that a lot of this is getting worked on and it's exciting to see because it is something that is going to be a really nice feature for a lot of people.
Definitely.
Hey, if you are not in the HubSpot user Slack, it's time. Get into the show notes, impactplus.com/hubcast. This is episode 275. Way at the bottom, there's a link to join the HubSpot user Slack. It's just the Slack group of lots of HubSpot nerds like us. You could say Hub fans who like to just throw feature requests in there, ask questions about how people do different things. It's a lot of fun. So we love you guys. We appreciate you guys. We hope that you have an amazing time at Inbound 2021.
We look forward to seeing
everybody's highlights next month.
Come tell us all about it in the HubSpot user Slack.
Yeah.
Please do. Yes, there will be lots of inbound chatter in the HubSpot user Slack. So definitely get in there because we'll be throwing in what sessions we're watching, which ones are good, which ones you need to hop into. Definitely get in there for that.
We've already gone over that you need a good like team squad to show up with to the virtual events so that you know when to switch sessions.
Yeah.
So we will be your squad. Come join us.
Your squad. We appreciate you guys. And until next time, this is Karina Duffy, JS Palmieri, and Stephanie Bayoki saying to you, get out there and get after it.